Blog Talk Radio.
You know, the dogs and the chickens and the lions. It must be time
for
the
manager.
And now it's time for another episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Brain Injury Radio is sponsored by the TBI Support Network.
Find them on the web at www.tbisn.com.
And now, Brain Injury Radio.
And now the best of Brain Injury Radio.
Please be advised this is pre-programmed and thank you for listening to Brain Injury Radio.
Psych, not true. This is really live. Brain Injury Radio, try calling in 424-243-9540 and see for yourself. I picked the wrong generic. Apologies. Welcome to the show, everyone. This is the regular Wednesday version of Recovery Now. I'm your host, Kim Justice. I'm going to try to get everything straight here. This is the last Wednesday of the month. Normally, Simon is here with me the last Wednesday. And so my first thought and prayer will go out to Simon. He's had jaw surgery yesterday and has just had one surgery after another from a terrible, what wound up being a much more involved car accident than they thought that he got into with his mom a few months back. And that's subsequent to the one that he had many years ago that was involved fatalities and gave him his brain injury. So hopefully he will be recovering smooth without a hitch. So I went ahead and put Simon Says, because that's what I always put. But Simon Says he hopes he'll be back next month on the last Wednesday in time for us to do a Halloween show, maybe in terms of something like what scares you and what can you do about it. But tonight, I'm very fortunate that my second Wednesday of each month co-host, the wonderful Karen Robinson, is here with me, standing in for herself and me and Simon. I'm a little fluffled tonight. She, like I said, is the second Wednesday of each month co-host. And this month, I had a booking. We had a Gold Star family show, and Karen was kind enough. It was an available date. I don't remember exactly what the circumstance was, but it overlapped with the show that she's usually with me on. And so works out good. 2 weeks later, she can be here, and hopefully Simon is recovering well. Karen, as far as I know, will be back in a couple weeks for our regular second Wednesday of each month show. And hopefully Simon will be back at the end of next month and we'll be back on our schedule. But in the meantime, we've been shuffling the deck on you a little bit. For those of you who are new around here, sometimes it's just this crazy. For those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers, and for that, it takes a whole lot of warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. If you want to know more about me, check out my website at inaflash.org. And Karen Robinson, who is I'm going to be bringing on in just a moment. For more on Karen, see hopetbi.com. She's a coach. She's a great blogger. And tonight we're going to be talking about resources to help those of us with TBI. And something that I wasn't aware of, I'm still not really. She told me, but it's been a month and it feels like a million miles. Dear Joyce Exchange. So I'll be very interested to hear about that. So we'll be discussing matters of the brain from injury impact through what recovery will be to adapting to what comes next and the possible add-on conditions from the original trauma and what a long road it is. And that's one of the reasons why we're going to add some additional help resources tonight. And we may talk about PTSD/PTS if we have time, or we'll hold that over for 2 weeks. We'll just see how it goes. And tonight I decided to make it an open mic. And I thought we were going to, God, there's so many people in my thoughts and prayers tonight. You know, Craig, our founder, has been sick for a couple of months now, in the hospital a couple times. He's still in a tough recovery time. And we're hoping, you know, for complete resolution and healing for him. So he's in our thoughts and prayers. Simon is, and Michael is. Michael was supposed to be calling in tonight to talk about a great award he got that I hope isn't not only that he's safe, but what he's getting an award for, that is safe as well, but it doesn't sound good for that. He lives in Pinellas County in the Tampa Bay area, and the hurricane, Ida? I'm sorry, I can't remember which one this is. But the latest hurricane that ground this morning is really doing a number on Florida. So our thoughts and prayers are with the people in Florida. I think it hit ground around one of my favorite parts of Florida, the Fort Myers, Sanibel, Isle of Capri part of Florida. They didn't know for sure whether it was going to be at Tampa, which is a little bit north, or a little further south. It turns out it moved a little further south and hit the worst, I guess, although I don't know how you measure that. Like now there are parts having 17 inches, 18 inches of rain and tornado warnings and 1.9 million people without their power. So a lot going on in a lot of Florida. It did move up to the Sarasota, Tampa area on its way to Orlando. If you've got vacation plans at Disney World right now, I think that's probably off. And the airports closed. So not the time to go there. But in any case, thoughts and prayers for everybody there. Looks horrible. I feel really blessed. We went from summer, feels like, I kept saying that, feels like 93 degrees, feels like 103, and all that heat and humidity, and I am not looking forward to winter, I never do, but we've had a drought, which I know isn't good. We're 7 inches under the rain that we need, which isn't good for the food supply and just isn't good. However, I will say it's been like perfect, sunny and 75 for a couple weeks. And so it broke that heat. I actually have a jacket on this evening. It's getting down into like 50s. I think tonight 48. Maybe a little early for that. We're not even to October yet, but in a couple days. And the last thing I'll say, and then I'll bring on Karen, is this is the end of Aneurysm Awareness Month. For those of us who had a brain aneurysm, every month, every day is Brain Aneurysm Awareness Time. But we spent the month and did a dedicated show last week on brain aneurysms, and it was with a group of survivors who each got different treatments, had them at different times. You could kind of see the difference. Mine was in 95. We had someone from 2001 and someone from 5 years ago. And then I think a 3 year ago person whose partner died of a boom, sudden aneurysm at a young age, healthy guy out riding his bike. They just got married and had a baby and boom, that was his end, unfortunately. So if you're interested, last Wednesday we had information on aneurysms, but I will just say a quick blurb and then we'll move on to this week's topic. But since it is the end of September, an estimated 6.5 million people in the United States have an unruptured brain aneurysm, or 1 in 50. The annual rate of rupture is approximately 8 to 10 per 100,000 people. About 30,000 people in the United States suffer a brain aneurysm rupture each year. A brain aneurysm ruptures every 18 minutes. And I'm a veteran of that tribe, and it's no fun. So in any case, I find it amazing. We all know about, have heard of heart disease, cancer, diabetes. I say this about regular TBI, which now ABI is a subset, TBI, so whatever. But for the numbers that we get in aneurysms as well as TBIs, I'm really shocked. We're doing a lot better. Not us. certainly us. We're doing a lot better. But the public is doing a little better, you know, probably because of football. Some know what a TBI is now. But for some of the other diseases that combined maybe don't have quite as many as the 2.6 million for a TBI and what I just read about the aneurysm. So few people know. I didn't know. I never heard of an aneurysm before I had one and it ruptured out of the clear blue. Had no idea. And most of the people I talk to don't know about a TBI, much about a TBI. They don't know about aneurysm unless they know someone who's had one. Every now and then I run into people that know, because I've been doing the show for 12 and a half years, and so, you know, word's gotten out, not only from here, obviously, but places like Karen's, the support groups. It's one thing, the one time I'll compliment social media, which you never hear me do that. This is a banner day. Put up a gold star. You won't hear this often. I mostly go the other direction. But there are a lot of groups out on social media now, and that's been a great way for survivors to connect. And it was really tough when survivors couldn't connect because there were so few people that understood, and it just added a layer of isolation and polarization to people trying to recover from a brain injury, not knowing whether they're on foot or horseback or what to expect, and in turn the caregivers as well. You know, they didn't ask to be put in that position and didn't get a handbook for it. So it's a complete game changer for everybody's life in the family, the survivor as well as the caregiver, and not a lot is known. The traditional medical model doesn't often have a lot to contribute, which is unfortunate. But now, through peer-to-peer support, which is hugely important, we're there for each other. We can learn a lot about what ails us, and we're going to be talking about some other resources tonight. But with that, I'm going to bring on Karen. I think I got in all the preliminaries that I wanted to get in. Let's check. Michael, Craig, Simon, Florida. Yeah. Karen Robinson. How are you doing tonight, Karen? How's the weather at your place?
Hey, Kim. I'm doing pretty good. It's actually about 48 degrees outside. Supposed to get down to 41 tonight, between 40 and 41. So I'm not looking forward to that. That's too close to freezing too early. And we're only getting up to about a high, I think they said, of like 59 tomorrow. So, yeah, that's still too cool this early.
Oh, gosh, but, it is.
It's been very – I've just been freezing the last couple of days. I've had my sweaters out, just wearing sweaters all day. I think you go from the 70s and 80s, and you plummet so fast, and your body goes into this shock. It's like, oh, no, not winter yet. I'm not ready. But, that's kind of where we're at with our weather today anyway.
That's really wild about your high. Our highs, I hoped, would be, you know, around, like, between 80, 81, 82, and it's been 70, 74 to 78 maybe, which is doable. It's, you know, maybe put on a long sleeve shirt or a sweater weather. And tonight the low will be 48. But, you know, again, with any of these highs, you know, that high is for a couple hours at the end of the day. So I can't imagine 59, the high of 59, that is way too early for that. It's not even October 1st yet to have a high like that. I hope that goes away right away. Maybe that's some blowback from down under. You're closer to Florida than I am.
Well, you know, we have that lake effect going too. But this Saturday, we get up to a blustery 70. Sarcasm. But yeah, for the rest of the week, though, it ranges between 51 and 66, 68 for our highs. It looks like we're making that fall switch, trending towards cooler weather. So speaking of weather, you touched on Florida. And that was Hurricane Ian that you're referencing down there. And it made landfall as a Category 4 hurricane. And about an hour ago, it was downgraded to a Category 2, which is still not great, but better than a 4. And it's making its way inland towards Orlando. So anybody in that area, please be cautious. They're expecting up to 2 feet of rain, I guess, in Orlando or Orange County this evening. And it looks like they've had a big blowout in Jacksonville. In fact, all the Jacksonville beaches are closed until further notice. And there's just a lot going on down there. There's been some, I think it was in East Naples, deputies had to rescue 30 people today just mm-hmm. from people needing help after the storm surge. And, you know, people get overly confident, I think, because they see that water go out and they're like, oh, it'll be fine. But that surge that comes back is sometimes more dangerous than the onset. So anyway,
yeah.
Just be careful out there, you guys. You know, try to stay safe. And if you need help, then they'll get to you as soon as possible. I know the fire chief in Fort Myers had made an announcement that he said emergency crews will get to residents as soon as possible. I mean, they're having to deal with trying to get their trucks through deep water as well. So everyone just stay safe out there.
Yeah, for sure. I just heard that they don't have emergency services because they simply can't get out
and
around.
Yeah, in some counties they don't.
Yeah, I think they
were
talking about Sarasota and Tampa. And it was so bad that Category 4, when it hit the ground in Fort Myers area. So now it's downgraded to a 2 as it goes to Orlando and Jacksonville. But yeah, it was this morning that it hit the Fort Myers area. That's my favorite. A little south of that, it got them to the Isle of Capri and Sanibel. Those are some of the best seashelling beaches. I haven't been there for a lot of years, but there was a time in my life where I was at all the beaches on both coasts quite a bit. And in California, the only place you could get a seashell 15 years ago was in a gift shop. Sanibel, it made you feel guilty to walk on the beach because it was just knee-high seashells as far as you could see. And so, like, what you did, I found, this is not a good time to talk about it, but those mesh bags that you wash nylons or bras or whatever you wash, you know, the mesh bags like that, that those work really well for people would go out shelling in the morning, you know, see what the tide washed in kind of a thing. And it's good because if you just take a bag or a bucket or something like that, you've got the sand and all that in there. And obviously it's salt water, so you still get some sand. But if you take a mesh bag like that and put your findings in there, then you can go in the water and, you know, dip it up and down a few times and get some of the big chunks of sand off. But like I said, walking on those seashells is what makes the sand. So it's difficult to walk on. I'd have a lot harder time now than at the age that I was going there pretty frequently, but that was the area, and that's south of Fort Myers, right where the worst of the Category 4 hit the ground this morning, so, and then moved up. Last night I was watching, and I wondered if the guy never slept that on the Weather Channel, that was the guy who wasn't out. They always have somebody out in the storm getting blown away in a rubber suit so you can see how bad it is, which I always thought was kind of interesting. You know, they can show with the camera what the trees are doing and what the rain looks like, but there's always got to be somebody out there with a microphone. I'll never forget one year Geraldo was out there and got hit in the head with a this isn't funny, but I mean, he's out there getting blown in, what, 80 mile an hour winds, trying to talk in the microphone, you know, while they're torn.
Oh my gosh, I remember that.
And blowing, and the sign uprooted and smacked him as it went by. And it always made me wonder, ever ever since then if I hadn't wondered before, you know, why they send people out there. But the guy in the studio, I saw him last night. It was probably 1 o'clock in the morning, and he was talking about, right then there was a little line between Fort Myers and Tampa, and it was a guessing game. It had looked like the whole time it was going to go straight to Tampa to hit first, and then an eastern wind kicked in or something, and so it was looking more and more like it might be Fort Myers instead of Tampa. So I was interested to see when I got up this morning, because, you know, you get tired and you should have turned the TV off a while ago, but you're staring at it too long, hearing them speculate too long, because nobody's going to know till the next morning, for sure. But I was interested when I got up this morning, because that's what I went to bed to. Was it Tampa or was it Fort Myers? And that would determine, I guess, the most amount of damage and where those people needed to be rescued. Now, when Michael PM'd me, and this made me worry a little, because I heard what you said in the map. They just showed 18 inches of rain in one place and 17 in another and 14 in another, and tornado warning chances, and
up to 12 feet in some areas of surge has come in.
Oh, sorry, that's what I meant to say, feet behind everything I just said. So 18 feet, 14 feet, 17 feet. It was just showing before I got on a thing on that. Maybe that's that surge back. But Michael PM'd me, I think it was this morning, maybe last night, but he said, he was very glib. He said he wasn't worried about it at all. He was on the 14th floor, and I wasn't sure that's good you're not on the ground, but that is kind of a weird thing. You know, we live in tornado country, and what they were talking about on the news tonight was, you know, if you've got 14 foot, 2 foot of rain in the basement or outside, then you can't really take shelter the way we take shelter, right? When there's going to be a tornado, we go down the basement, right? But you don't want to do that if you're in Florida, but you don't really want to be high up. So anyway, I would be concerned, but I'm going to just err on the side that 1.9 million people don't have power in Florida last time I checked. And hopefully that's the case. Hopefully he's got flashlights and batteries and candles and is safe and is just not calling in because he doesn't have power and not because of anything worse than that. But that's a lot of people to not have power, and this is going to go on a lot of it, like,
yeah, almost
through
2 million
tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah, almost,
yeah,
2 million without power, and it's not supposed to hit Orlando. Well, it should be hitting Orlando any time between now and 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm. And then it'll go back up. They said it could be, I mean, obviously for the parts it hit this morning, it's probably going to be over by earlier in the morning, but it's going to continue. This storm is going to keep going, you know, through tomorrow, at least in the areas that it hasn't hit. It's cutting a wide berth across Florida and then going up the coast. And but it's good.
Up through Georgia.
Yeah, it looked like a couple of the Carolinas too, but hopefully it's going to weaken. As you said, it already has, as it's been on the ground. It was the people this morning. But, you know, I wondered, and then I'm going to quit talking about the ocean because I don't know, but they did show Tampa and Sarasota, and how you mentioned how when the water goes out and there's no water where they're supposed to be, they showed a really tall pole, let's say, that had barnacles on it, and that's how where the water normally is, and it was way above where this guy was standing. And I just wondered, because the storm will have moved, you know, like practically to the other side of the state, if that water back in the Sarasota, Tampa area is going to just filter back in slower tomorrow or tonight, whenever it's coming back, and that it won't be a surge like it was east of there. But we don't have a Floridian here. Were you just visiting Florida? Your daughter, does she live there?
My daughter and my grandkids live in Orlando.
That's what I thought, because you went on your trip to... So have you heard from them?
Not in a few hours. It kind of made me wonder if the power was out. We've been kind of keeping our eyes and ears open and, you know, having a higher sense of awareness about that. We usually talk a lot. In fact, one of my granddaughters' first birthday is today, of all times, during hurricane season, with Hurricane Ian hitting landfall there. And so we would be on video chat up until I got on with you, and we haven't heard from them in a few hours. So my guess is that the power is either out there, or, you know, they have some connection issues. Which also, you know, I think it was 10 minutes ago, Comcast opened free Wi-Fi hotspots for those that are impacted by the storm. And they opened, I guess, more than 200,000 public Xfinity Wi-Fi hotspots, not just in Florida, but throughout Alabama, Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina, so people can stay connected during Hurricane Ian. And for those that are listening, the hotspots are free for anyone to use, including non-Comcast or non-Xfinity customers. So there's about 90,000 of the hotspots that are in Florida, just so people can stay in contact with people outside of that situation.
Does that mean you have to be able to get to one?
I'm not sure how that works down there. My understanding about a hotspot is that it just, you have to be within vicinity of it. But I don't know how that works, honestly, Kim. I know my son has a hotspot that his school gave him for his school Chromebook, and he can use it anywhere. He just has a hotspot. He can turn it on, and it works anywhere. Now, how that works with public hotspots or larger hotspots like that from a corporate perspective, I have no idea. But I know the one that he has and can carry with him, even in the car, it can work in the car even.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, I'm not either. I thought that's where, like, people parked outside coffee joints. I was going to say, that's great if you can make it to a hot spot, but that might extend,
well, I know that
I guess.
I know that mobile hotspots connect to the same 4G or 5G cellular networks that most cell phones do. I'm not sure how that works when the power is out, or if that even affects it at all. I'm not sure.
Not unless the 5G tower blows over, I guess. So, hell of a time for windmills, unless they spun off their axis, then it would be kind of dangerous. and Friday the 13th.
Oh my goodness.
But
Final Destination.
I don't know why I thought of that, because I just drove by a street today and saw a Spirit Halloween store opened and thought, huh, everything has been so early this year. You know, it's like they were having Christmas in July ads, you know, on TV and,
oh my goodness,
in the newspaper, and they've had Halloween stuff up for, not that I'm ever in any stores, but I can tell by emails I get from places I shop, sending out Halloween stuff at the beginning of September. And now the Halloween stuff is all gone, and they're getting out, there's Christmas trees out places. I did stop outside at the hardware store. I was hoping to get a mum for one of my dead summer flowers, a fall flower, to put out in the garden. But and they had some outside, but I happened to see through the window into the store, and they had fake Christmas trees up already. I'm like, really? We're not even to the 1st of October yet. Crazy. I don't know.
Yeah,
so
that's pretty crazy.
There is someone on the line. I do want to say the number is 424-243-9540. And press 1 if you call in and you want to contribute something to the show. We're going to be talking about some help resources tonight, starting in just a moment, but with what's going on down in Florida, we started talking about that a little bit and the end of Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month, and then we started talking about Florida. So tell us about the Hope TBI Co-op.
Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's basically a cooperative, and it's called Hope TBI Co-op and Exchange. And the co-op is something that where essentially you can gift items, medical items, to other people who are in need. You're not allowed to sell anything there. And we realize that insurance does not always cover all the needs a person has, especially after experiencing a devastating and catastrophic medical emergency. And so we also realize that not everyone has insurance. And when you go through an emergency, like anyone who has sustained any kind of polytrauma or brain injury, we understand that being financially strapped or destitute or having disabilities after a life-changing medical event, it just creates this financial burden that you weren't expecting to have to deal with. And a lot of times people aren't able to access things that they need for medical supplies. And so the Hope TBI Co-op and Exchange is a Facebook group that I started a few years ago, actually. And it allows you to offer and request medical supplies and equipment based on the co-op and exchange. So there's no money involved. People are not allowed to sell. Vendors are not allowed to be a part of the group. The group allows you to also post vetted public funding request pages. A lot of support groups don't allow you to post your GoFundMes or your Post Hopes or Pay It Forward, the You Caring, et cetera, et cetera, that a lot of people utilize in order to get donations to help with their medical bills. And we do allow that at the at Hope TBI Co-op and Exchange. We do try to vet those posts, though, to make sure they're legitimate as much as we can, make sure we don't have scammers getting in there. But there's no selling of items. I mentioned that. It's not a dumping ground. It's not a place for you just to get rid of your trash or your chunk. So, you know, we try to make that really clear too. We don't want people donating stuff that's broken. So no donating things that are broken, damaged, expired, or we don't want them smelling badly, or, you know, nothing, no bodily fluids in them or on them. You know, so it's just a matter of showing respect to the people that you're donating to. There's no solicitation that's permitted. And if you're a business owner that wants to donate or gift durable medical equipment or supplies, then they can contact myself or they can contact one of our admin of the group, and then we'll make sure that those supplies get routed to the people that need those particular supplies, because we get requests all the time. And then we just encourage people to keep their agreements. So if they have promised an item to somebody, follow through right away with making sure they get that item. You know, make it available to them in a way that you can both agree on, whether that's in writing, you know, whether that involves shipping or pickup or something like that. You just want to make sure that you also have a clear idea of where the person is that you're donating to. Because if they live in another country, are you going to be able to cover the shipping for that for them? You should not be asking them to pay for shipping, because again, that is you donating to them, and that includes you donating the shipping costs. So just being mindful of that. And then it goes without saying, I think, but I always feel like I have to mention it, that there's no hate speech or bullying allowed. So no flaming or catfishing or any of those types of behavior are allowed in the group. And we will ban folks that do that right away. They're not allowed to scam in on people and, you know, and cause harm towards anyone. And just everyone doing their best they can to bring the ability to pay it forward, you know, just to be able to help. Sometimes someone might have a relative or a family member that has sustained an injury, and maybe they have made their transition and have died, and they don't know what to do with the leftover hospital bed or the wheelchair or the crutches or the braces and things like that. Well, they can be donated to the Hope TBI Co-op in exchange. And we have different groups within the group, like different folders for every state. And right now, we only serve the United States. I know that we're looking at incorporating other countries within the group, and something else we're going to be incorporating as well coming up in the next few months is we're going to have a section for providers to be able to donate services as well. So providers that could be any kind of provider, whether it's endocrinologists, neuroendocrinologists, doctors, nurses, medical assistants, massage therapists, physical therapists, you name it, if they provide a service, then they're going to be able to donate their services as well. There's a lot of people out there that are wanting to be able to give back and to help the brain injury community and help people that are in need. And hopefully we can provide a bridge and a way to do that. And so that essentially is what the Hope TBI Co-op in Exchange is about. And then you can find the link for that at hopetbi.com. And for the hopetbi.com, under our community awareness, we have different groups that are show up on there under our awareness matters tab. Then you'll see where we have our different groups and support groups. And we also have a online support group as well through Facebook for survivors and caregivers that can be a part of gaining awareness essentially about brain injury and polytrauma. So we have a lot that we try to offer as far as helping, and the Hope TBI site in general, the majority of the things that we provide from that site are not charged for. The only paid services from Hope TBI involve any virtual workshops or membership services that we have just started providing as well. But the rest of everything else from the website is we do to pay it forward, and we don't charge for.
But you'd pay for shipping, right? I mean, if someone, if you needed a wheelchair and someone had one, but they were on the other side of the country.
Our group would not pay for the shipping. The person donating the item would pay for their own shipping.
That's what I was getting at. Was it person donating or the person receiving? Does it go to you?
The person donating would. No. It's an agreement between the two parties. And
that's what I thought.
We're just like a conduit, I guess, or a safe space for them to be able to connect at or connect through. And to my knowledge, you know, there's a lot of places throughout different states that also offer donations or free medical equipment or medical equipment at a discount. And you just need to know how to access those resources. If someone doesn't know how to access those resources, all they have to do is go to the contact page on hopetbi.com, which is under the About Our Site tab at the very bottom where it says Contact Us. They'll get a hold of me, and I'll be glad to hook them up with whatever resources that I can procure from their area. And we help people globally try to find assistance with stuff like that. But the Hope TBI Co-op and Exchange right now just serves the U.S. However, individuals who need help that are outside of the U.S., we don't just turn them away. We try to assist them and put them into contact with resources in their area as well.
Very cool. Because you're right, even when I fell, you know, and broke my foot in three places, it was this time last year, actually, I was reminded because of an annual doctor's appointment that I had to do in a boot last year with crutches, that even that, you know, having to buy the compression sock, the boot, and the crutches, and then crutches aren't made the way they were. Last time I needed them was in 77. They were made of wood, and they had really good padding under the armpit and where you held it with your hand. I mean, they were really nice padding. It was a pain. You had to kind of go get measured when you couldn't walk, and they cut the wood, put the tip on the bottom. But this time I found out, you know, they're all adjustable metal crutches, and there is no padding. It's painful to walk around with no padding under your armpit or where you're holding the crutches. So by the time that was done and the insurance didn't pay for that stuff, I had to get the boot, the compression, couple compression socks so you have a spare when you're washing them, and the crutches, and then some pads, I don't know what you'd call them, but yeah, basically they have a very padded thing you can put over the top of the crutch and where you grip it with your hand, which is just another way for them to, you know, make another $30 out of the deal. So even something like that wasn't inexpensive. And when you're talking about wheelchairs and walkers, I've seen from experience in my family that those are not inexpensive. So that's a really good thing that you're doing and good for us to know about.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate being able to bring awareness to it. I'd like to see it grow and expand, and I'd like to be able to start groups for representing other countries as well. But right now, you know, just trying to grow the one that we have in the States here is definitely a team effort. We do list durable medical equipment, supplies, technology, machinery, prosthetics, basically anything someone is willing to gift for free to someone in need. There are some things that we will not allow to be posted in the group, though. And, you know, I like to make sure that people are clear on that, too. When they list something, they want to make sure they're putting a description of what they're donating or a description of what they need if they're requesting a donation. They need to state whether it's they're able to ship it or not ship it, just details. And providing pictures of the item is really useful, too. When you've given away the item, we ask that people please update their posts so other folks aren't getting hopeful about something being available if it's already been gifted. And, you know, some ideas of things that can be gifted are vehicles, hospital beds, wheelchairs, braces, ventilator equipment, oxygen concentrators, traction equipment, personal care aids, books, posy lifts, adaptive equipment, manuals, information, bathing supplies, not used bathing supplies, please. So no used soap or things like that.
Yeah.
But mobility aids and, you know, those are just some ideas. And what we don't accept, though, we don't accept food. Like, because a lot of the food, like even Jevity and things like that, have expiration dates. And
yeah,
so
food, drugs,
that is something,
no.
and medications, you know, we encourage people no exchanging or gifting medications or food supplies or anything that is necessarily perishable.
Right.
There are some folks that will want to donate groceries to somebody, like if they're local, and that's up to them to agree to. We also offer safety guide about how to meet somebody in a safe way, because you don't want to just allow anybody into your home or, you know, from the online. And there's ways to be safe about that. You know, and anytime someone's a no-show, or says they're going to show up and they don't show up, those people will be blocked, because we can't have people saying they're going to do something and then not follow through, because that is just not going to be good for the person that is expecting that. And then it's, you know, we want our group to have a high level of ethics and integrity. And so that's really important. And nobody in the group people that are giving or gifting things away or gifting them to other people, they're not necessarily medical professionals. These are people who are going through the same thing that the other person might be going through or have gone through. And so they're not going to be giving medical advice. It's, you know, if someone gets a prescription from their healthcare provider for something, and someone in the group has that their insurance won't cover, then that is a real blessing, and that's what we're hoping for, is to be able for that gap to be filled a little bit. And hopefully it gets to the point where it grows to where it just kind of is its own living, breathing thing without having to be supervised so much.
Yes, definitely, definitely. I just realized I forgot to go back to the chat. Hello, chat. I was a little late here. Anyway, that is a great program. Very useful, because
program,
a lot of the
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that independent living places, you know, you hear of some places that are trying to do the same thing, but unfortunately so much of it is needed. that you often don't find it in one place. So, you know, the more people that are doing this type of thing, the more apt the people in need are going to be able to find what they need when the time comes. That was all just a very cool thing that you're doing and giving another option, you know, if somebody thinks they know, or like you said, you know, people who maybe it, they do whatever, they give it away, they sell it, it's gone. Someone's gotten their hopes up at another place, wherever, maybe at an independent living center or one of those kind of things, then they have another option. So I'm glad that we talked about it tonight and have it on tape that because they sure don't give these things away at the pharmacy or, you know, anything like that. And so it's great when people aren't using this stuff anymore. And you gave a good example to when it isn't needed anymore. It's a great way to pay it forward. I mean, you might be able to get a couple bucks out of something, but it's sure a great way to pay it forward because you're right. People aren't at the top of their financial game when they're in need, and they wouldn't be asking if it wasn't a problem. So, great. Okay, do you remember what you were going to say now?
I do. I was going to say that speaking of support organizations or support groups, you know, I just think that, first of all, I want to say this. There's no such thing, from my opinion, and this is my very humble opinion, there's no such thing as competition when you're serving the public. I believe that you can't have too much help. You can't have too many people doing the same things when it involves giving back. And so I think that there's this sense of family within the brain injury community or chronic illness or chronic pain, those kind of communities where people, they want to give back. And, you know, even if they don't have a lot to give. But speaking of which, that being said, there's another group that I'd like to plug that I learned about recently within the last few months. And that's called the Brain Exchange. And that's what you had mentioned at the beginning of the show. It's called the Brain Exchange, and it's the website is dearjoyce.club. And it's what she's doing with her group is that it's an exclusive program that meets the needs for those with brain injuries that need to socialize. It meets the need to socialize and challenge one another, not just thoughtful, but really fun ways. And survivors who join her group, and it's a virtual group, but survivors who join, they receive a pen pal program with like-minded individuals, so someone else with a brain injury or someone that is also looking to be a pen pal. Or if someone wants to sign up to be a mentor to somebody with a brain injury, they can do that too. You know, share ideas of how to cope or how to get through things. But the survivors who join, again, they receive a pen pal. They can communicate through ongoing emails. There's two monthly meetings which assist in where essentially, the survivors could just kind of share their joys and struggles through some real life stuff that they're going through. And there's different activities. They have a private Facebook group called Brain Exchange. And they also provide regular podcasts that to share the outlook of a war veteran with a TBI. They have a mentoring program to connect with a mentor. A TBI survivor to help that is a TBI survivor. So the mentor you get will be somebody who's actually living it. and has moved from survivor to thriver, or is actually going through the same things that you may be going through, and you guys can be a support system for each other.
Do they have to pay for their podcast? I wonder.
I don't know if the Brain Exchange pays for their podcast. I'm not sure. I don't know that information. But I know that being a member
ask
is
them
free.
Sometime.
And yeah,
well,
absolutely.
I might be able to
Joyce
give them a home
Sarah
if they have to pay.
Oh, I'm sure they would like to hear that. But Joyce and Sarah are the ones that run that. And they're really just getting the group going, and they're really just trying to build it. And anytime someone's trying to reach out and help the community, I just think it's important that we all band together to support those efforts. And so I just wanted to give them a shout out in their effort.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you did. And are these people you talk to ever? I mean,
yeah, well, through email. We've talked through email.
Yeah.
And so, yes, talked with them one-on-one, Joyce specifically.
Well, you don't even have to talk to them, but you can email them. I was just going to say, this is really off-the-air conversation, but as long as we're on the air, just see if they're having to pay for their podcast. If they're just getting started, I might be able to help them out with that.
Yeah, I'll shoot them an email and see what her thoughts are on that.
Yeah, and maybe
yeah,
they're not.
Yeah, do you guys know anybody who... Maybe they're
paying.
Not what? I'm sorry.
Nothing. Maybe they're not paying. They might be doing like a live Facebook thing or a Zoom thing or something else. I don't know what everybody's doing, but I know that... a lot of our hosts like the fact that they don't have to pay for a podcast here. That's why a lot of people came. You know, that's why we've got them 7 nights a week. But I think I'm going to be having another opening soon. I was a little irritated when you called. I have an opening already. A Sunday opening, but I think I'm going to have another day too open. So anyway, only because you brought it up, I just thought you might ask them if whatever they're doing, if it's free or they've got it, you know, rolled up, there might be a conflict if it's a, but not a conflict. It's not a competition thing. It's just, you know, Brain Injury Radio is a nonprofit too, and we don't ask for money. We don't ask for donations. And this, like what you were just talking about, and what they're doing sound helpful enough. And yes, we all want to band together and offer all the help that we can, but it's hard for me to offer... this is not these people that I'm referring to. I don't know these people listening, until Karen just told me about them. But in the past, other hosts who have gotten a program and then set up their own nonprofit and used the time being given freely to them here, most graciously from Craig, to raise money for their nonprofit on his dime, I have an ethical problem with that. On the other hand, Craig has said things like our books, and I plug, you know, Simon's site and your site. He said, you know, we work hard doing what we're doing, and we should, you know, be able to do that. So it's just a matter to what extent it is. I had a host once that, like I said, he came on, you know, not working, being a host and was here about 6 months and then set up a nonprofit and just plugged the hell out of his nonprofit, just every single show. You know, and Brain Injury Radio has been on the air for 14 years, and we don't have commercials, and we don't ask our listeners for money. So, anyway, it's difficult, you know, when you're... we just need to talk about it, that's all. You know, see what they've got going. That mentorship program and all of that, those are services that are great, and what you're doing, that's a service that's great, and I think that would be a great thing to put out there, here, as well as there and there, you know what I mean? So we just talk about it, that's all. But very cool.
It's just a great opportunity, and I appreciate
it is
being able to support other people who are able to do that as well.
Me too.
There's so much help needed out there. You know, there's just not enough research funding. There's not enough medical care funding. I mean, we could get on a soapbox about the lack of funding for brain injury that needs to be there and our healthcare system in general, but I think that's a whole nother show and soapbox.
It kind of is, because we'll talk about other things, but one thing, I don't want to give it all away, and I'm not plugging it because it's not written yet, but I'm writing a new book now, and it's about mental health, but also back in the day, it goes from like the 1800s up to present, and you go back to the 1800s, and even if a person had epilepsy, for example, or I have a case, someone that I interviewed that, you know, a lot of you already know about and have seen him, but back in the 70s, what launched Geraldo's career was an expose on a place in New York called Willowbrook. And it was a mental health hospital, but, you know, there might have been someone with a developmental disability, or in this case, cerebral palsy is what Bernard had. And he spent the majority of his life living in this institution where he didn't belong. And there are so many cases of that, and then abuses and neglect that go with it, that it's just been a real eye-opener for me. And one of the things that got me doing this was a lot of the things I knew already from being around here, but Gary and I stopped in Missouri on our way home from vacation back in May, and we were getting gas, and I was sitting there, and there was a sign in front of me that said Lunatic Museum. And I, you know, in this world of woke, I did a double take at that and thought, huh. And we were tired. That's 3/4 of the way home, you know, from where we had been driving. And it was like 4 o'clock on a Sunday. But when he got back in the car, I said, why don't we drive by this place? And this was a 6-exit town. So we just happened to get off on the exit and go into the gas station that just happened to have the billboard right in front of my face saying the place was 3 blocks away. So I don't really believe in coincidences like that. So we wound up going there, and there was nobody there for my COVID phobia because they were opened, but they closed at 5. It was 4. No one was there. We whizzed through the 4 floors of this place that used to be a mental hospital, and then got home. That was May, June, July, August. In August, I'm watching the news, and I see this blurb on a small town in Iowa about 45 minutes away from here. And this was a place for developmentally and physically disabled children. And there was a big expose, and they were going to be having a DOJ investigation is what the news piece was about, because some complaints had been raised. And I kind of got my ears up about that because that was like Willowbrook in the 70s, you know, and here it is 2022. So I happened to be watching the news a month later or whatever it was when they came on, and I've got a copy of the DOJ report, but they were using people in this vulnerable group who can't give consent, aren't able to give consent for human experimentation and some other things that aren't good at all. And the DOJ did find the place guilty of doing those things. And those are things that happened back in the 1800s, in the mid-70s, and in fact are still going on today in 2022. And so I felt compelled to write about it because apparently society needs to have its collective conscience shaken up every decade or so. You know, anything that has tended to make society feel uncomfortable in the past has been something that they've wanted to lock away, out of sight, out of mind, kind of a thing, and not think about it if it doesn't affect them. But really, it could affect anybody at any time. You know, some of the people, I've got a list that would, well, it'll be in the book, but that you could get committed for back in the day. And what one of them really amounted to was TBIs. One of them said kicked in the head by a horse. So I think that would be a TBI. And there were other things, if you read between the lines, that would be a TBI. So, and some people were just elderly. So across the gamut, people get put in these institutional settings, can't advocate for themselves, and bad things happen. And it's sad to me. It was shocking and sad, heartbreaking to me that it's not history unless it's history repeating, because this kind of stuff has been going on for centuries. So anyway, I don't profess to have answers, but can certainly lay out some, I've talked to some fascinating people who have made it out, didn't live and die there, but spent a good amount of their life in these institutions, and made it out, and then a couple that didn't make it out. One that chose to live and die there because at the point they found out he never belonged there in the first place. He had lived there 30 years and felt like he wouldn't know how to do for himself on the outside. I kind of liken it to like a battered women's syndrome kind of thing, because he would rather stay under those abhorrent conditions that he knew than to face the fear of the complete and total unknown on the outside. And so I hope that by writing this book and raising the awareness on some of these things that go on, it's not like it hasn't been done before. There's another gal, and I'll be talking about her too, but a reporter back in 1900 who did something amazing, and women didn't get to do anything back in 1900, right? They were property, and they weren't allowed to think. And she pulled a Geraldo, even more so than Geraldo did. And I'll be explaining that. But so there have been people along the way who've tried to shine a light in the dark crevices. But when you talked about the healthcare system, certainly that has changed a lot, and not all for the good. But other things like that haven't changed. You know, using people that can't give consent to experiment is really a horrible thing. I wouldn't be able to believe it. And you know, the governor decided that this place would be closed after this DOJ report came out. But it's going to be closed in, get this, 2 years. And what she said was that they needed to find good homes for these residents. Well, in most every state, there's more than one of these types of facilities. And the truth of the matter is, I talked to someone who was a resident for 11 years, and now he's out, learned to be independent, lives somewhere else in the state. I talked to him for quite a while, and a few of these people that I talked about that made it out did what we do around here. They got into advocacy, you know, disability advocacy, both of them. Mm-hmm. And he said that more likely 60% of the people who are residents, let's call this place number two, okay, state hospital number two, just for the heck of it. We'll give it that label. There's a state hospital number one that's 3 hours away. It's older. It's had as many complaints. It's not as updated. And he said that 60% of the residents in this place would be moved there. Just a shell game, a political shell game, that they'll just be moved to another institution like it. But worse, that more to the point, is that this town has about 5,000 people in it, and the owner of this facility is the largest employer in that town. So the reason for the 2 years is more likely finding employment or luring in new business like a factory or something into that town, or that town will blow off the map, was his feeling, and definitely my feeling as I heard him say it. I thought, what would take 2 years? My God, you've got that kind of stuff going on and it's going to take you 2 years to let that stuff keep happening before you move people, before you do close it down. And so that made sense to me, that it really didn't have much to do with the residents as much as it did the town and finding employment for all the people that this place employs. So anyway, stay tuned. It'll probably take me longer. This is different. The first two books I wrote were about my experience, so I didn't have to do research. So if I'm a little more twisted the next couple months, tired or whatever, making mistakes, I've done a mountain of research, and I had to stop at a point because there was so much research to be had to write this book. I was like, okay, I gotta stop for a minute with the research and write something. Or I could research until the end of time, you know, have a folder so full that all my computer space is gone. And so I did. I wrote the title page and the table of contents and the first chapter. And now I'm taking a little break to enjoy this few days of nice weather we're going to have tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday. But I've pretty much been working around the clock on that and then trying to book shows into the middle of January so that I have that done and I can look on Monday and see who my guest is going to be or what the topic's going to be. And I've been doing this long enough that I can handle the interview and reading my notes before, you know, a couple days before the show and then doing the show, but won't be making the mountain of phone calls that I make normally all during the week to procure these guests and so forth, and be able to focus more on writing the book. I noticed that a couple different things with age, maybe, and too long of COVID being a concern and too much going on out in society, and with my family, actually. My dad's not doing he's doing worse than he was before, that it's really hard. I'm really noticing the difficulty in multitasking and trying to keep my focus when I'm writing, because it's been a while. I think it was, I'm not sure, when I wrote Hootie's Hollow back in 2016, maybe. And life looked a lot different back in 2016 than it does today. You know, there's a lot more things going on that require my attention, or that just get my attention, because they're going on. But, you know, I don't know why I felt called upon at this time to do this, that these things kept presenting. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. It's kind of like cooking. I don't know how I would know that since I don't cook, but the research is like having a lot of ingredients, and then the writing the book will be like you know, putting the right amount of the ingredients in, you've got to draw a line somewhere to get your point across, but there's got to be a stopping point with the research. What's sad is that there's so many examples of what I'm talking about, but anyway,
it sounds
I was just
very
watching
interesting.
It. Yeah, it is interesting in a sick sort of way. I wish it could be done by Halloween, but that's not going to happen, only because it's there's other things too, like there's going to be pictures in it, and the pictures in my other books are pictures I took, and we went back to Missouri this last weekend, and again, this was another I don't believe in coincidence thing, because it's 2.5 hours away, and they have examples of some of these torture / treatment objects down there. And you can't just go online and use a picture because of, you know, caution about copyright infringement. And the Library of Congress has a lot of free pictures. And it was weird because they had a thing that said anything before, let's just say 1927, let's say, just throw a dart. It was 23 or 27, that anything before that was public domain and you could use it. Okay, great. That sounds simple enough. Then there was unless someone has bought, like, a lot of pictures, you know, like in an auction or something, so somebody winds up having ownership to, like, the person who shot the picture is the one who has the copyright, but that photographer might have been dead since way before 1927, but if someone had bought a collection, is maybe what I should have said, of their photographs, then they would hold the copyright now. And so it's super, it's like doing a freaking math problem. And then I get frustrated because there's a billion, zillion pictures on Library of Congress and a couple other places. And, you know, I didn't really feel like hunting people down and trying to get permission on a lot of this stuff. And so I will have to on some things, but our dog sitter, you know, we're at 750,000 people now in our city, and our dog sitter goes, this is her full-time job. She is never at home. She is at somebody's place. She does both pet sitting and elder care. Originally, she was a professional caregiver, but her back gave out from trying to lift people, which I hear over and over again from caregiver type people. So now she's more of a companion, you know, goes to get people's groceries for them, the elderly and so forth, runs errands for them, takes them for a doctor appointment, that sort of thing. And then she does pet sitting. So she started a business of her own. So she's always busy, but I texted her on just a fluke last Saturday, and I said, you don't happen to be sitting in the neighborhood, do you? And she said, yes, as a matter of fact, I walked 2 dogs by your house today. It's like, you're kidding me. I've texted her a couple times, and she's been, you know, like 30 miles away. One time she was 3 hours away in another town. I mean, the gal's all over the map. And I said, wow, would there be any way, because we can't really, Eddie, the puppy, you know, we can't really leave the dogs as long as it would take 2.5 hours down, 2.5 hours back. So that's 5 hours just in driving to spend an hour, hour and a half, so I could photograph things and be able to use my own photographs, get the museum's permission to be able to use the photographs I was taking myself, which they gave me. But anyway, I said to her, is there any way that you would be able to come here for a half an hour even? I said like at 4, because that would have been halfway for us to let the dogs out and be here for about a half hour while they run around, stretch their legs, get worn out, and go back in their box for a couple hours. And yes, she was able to do that. So on the spur of the moment, without having planned it, it just worked out, and we took the long hike back to Missouri. When we were down there that back in May and did that quick walkthrough, my jaw was on the ground at what I was seeing, and I didn't even bring my camera in. Like I said, we were tired. It was the end of a trip. We were just wanting to get home. I didn't know what to expect, and when I got in there, I clicked a couple things on my phone, but they wouldn't be the quality. I've got a dinosaur phone. They wouldn't be the quality that I would need to use in a book. And so that was pretty wild. So that's what we spent last Saturday doing, and thank goodness that, yeah, she happened to be in the neighborhood, and yes, she was able to come over here and spend half hour, 45 minutes halfway, so otherwise we wouldn't have been able to go and do this. So, I don't know, everything just points to the direction that I'm supposed to be doing it, I guess.
All in due time and all as it unfolds, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's a different experience, like I say, just because it's true story. The whole thing, everything I say in there is true. So, but someone made a editor, writer, group person that I know suggested that on some of the people that are not around anymore, if anyone wanted to contradict anything I had to say, there's something called creative nonfiction. And, you know, that's where maybe you'd change some names. Some people want me to say their names. And there's other people probably in this thing that's going on right now that I was talking about. There are lawsuits blowing up all over the place over this, and it's probably in all of our best interest to not use their real names in the middle of litigation. And so it just covers it. So what I'll say is that everything in the book is based on fact. It's a nonfiction book. And I would just add that my mind couldn't make up anything as bad as what the truth is. So interesting. It'll just be different. I've never done anything like this before. I don't think I'm pretty positive I'll never do anything like this again. But it's different. I'm glad I've had the experience that I've had, but this takes a sharp left from what I've done before, which was telling my own stories, which didn't take research. It just took remembering a little research, you know, going back and looking at photographs and the dates on them. Oh, that's when that happened. But nothing like this. So, but there's a lot of resources out there. So, and then double checking and triple checking things. But as far as the other resources, I know we're dragging on tonight. Are you hearing anything from Orlando yet?
I've been totally focused on our show. I haven't been paying attention that way.
Okay.
But no, I haven't heard my phone ding at all yet.
Okay. Where was that thing that I had here? It was about, I had an article and I did something with it. It was another resources thing to help people with brain injury resources. But I did something with it. What did I do?
What are you thinking about there, lady?
Well, I mean, it was additional resources. You brought up two great resources. And I had, there were five, no, I believe it was six other resources that I had read about in an article. And I had the article in front of me, but now I don't. So that's what I'm thinking about. I hit the wrong, a wrong tab and lost the article I had in front of me that were some further resources. I don't really count, you know, Les works for an independent living center. Every state is required to have one. And it's really, somebody's got to change their name because an independent living center in the context of the one that every state is required to at least have one of is not a place where people live. It has nothing to do with housing. It has to do with resources. And a lot of that is free, and some things have a nominal charge. And it might be, I think you can look up Administration for Community Living, ACL, I think is what it's called, and then there should be a drop down with your state on it, because if you put in independent living, you're going to find a bunch of places that are apartments for senior independent living, and that is not what this is. It's a place you can go and get resources. It might be on support groups, it might be on rehab, it might be on life skills training courses that they have, or helping you to write a resume. Whatever your needs are, they try to accommodate them or refer you to someone who can help. And these ACL, Administration for Community Living, these places came about after the ADA, Americans with Disability Act. Let me look up this ACL and make sure that this is, no, not ACLU.
While you're looking that up, can I mention something?
Yeah.
Okay. So speaking of resources and items that are free to access as far as educational opportunities, I came across this organization a few weeks ago that I'm just really impressed with. I wanted to share it with you and share it with our listening audience. It's called Empowerment Research LLC, and it's actually a series of webinars and workshops that they put on, and it's done for free. And they provide that as part of a funding grant they received through the Brain Injury Alliance of Arizona. And they put on these webinars for anyone to attend, whether it's laypersons, survivors, caregivers, healthcare providers, basically anyone that enrolls can enroll. And it's very, very educational, very thorough. It's led by a doctor and that has specialty with brain injury education, brain injury psychology. And there's a series of webinars coming up and people can register for them through Eventbrite. It's www.eventbrite.com. And if they, it's put on by someone named Dr. Susan Wolf, W-O-L-F. And her partner is Tiffany Wilkinson. And they are a fantastic duo. There's some, just to give you an idea of some of the workshops coming up, on October 5th, there's All About the A's, which is about assets, assessments, and analysis of behavior. That's considered the TBI 202 workshop. There's also one that I would recommend everyone that works with any human being to take, whether you're a professional or a non-professional, educator, law enforcement, EMS, healthcare provider, caregiver, survivor, I mean literally everyone. And it's called TBI 101, Can't You See Me? TBI, the Invisible Disability. And I feel like I'm very well-versed and knowledgeable and extensively self-taught about the world of TBI. And I learned quite a bit from their program. I did take that workshop. They have a two-day workshop, and then they also have a multiple-hour workshop that's available. And anyway, it's free, and it's worth your time. So, you know, I really recommend people take the TBI 101. In fact, you would have to take the earlier workshops, like the 101s or the 202s, before you're allowed to attend their higher number workshops. For example, there's TBI 303, which is Contemporary Issues, Executive Functioning and Transition. There's TBI 404. It's not just academics, cognitive interventions after brain injury. And then there's a TBI 505, which is a bump or a bleed and where it can lead. And that's just their current workshops. They have nine current workshops available on various multiple dates and various hours. And they have 33 past workshops they've done, including a Contemporary Issues in Brain Injury series. And just a lot of different things, School of Hard Knocks, Introduction to Concussion, and Executive Functioning and Neurodevelopment. And these are just some of the workshops that they put on. And they do it all for free to, as a way to bring awareness and education to the community, to bring awareness to brain injury. And it's definitely worth your time. And what I'll do is, so our listeners can get access to the link, is if you log into the Brain Injury Radio on the show that's playing now, the show will be on demand once we're all done with it. Underneath that show is a comment section. And in that comment section, I'm going to post the link to that Eventbrite so people have access to it to be able to register for some of those workshops. Again, I don't think that we can have too much information out there. And it's really important to have information from people that are professionals and legitimate and not just someone giving their opinions. And so it's nice to be able to have someone that's professional, that's really vested in being able to provide this kind of information and being able to do it because they're is a passion in it. And one of the reasons that Dr. Wolf also provides this education is because she also is a survivor of a TBI. And she really just finds great passion and value in educating people about it. And so, yeah, that's another great resource for people to be able to procure more information. And it's a good way to self-advocate You know, the knowledge is power, and the more you can educate yourself about your injury or the injury of a loved one, the better that you can advocate for them or advocate for yourself. The more educated you can speak on the topic, and the better care you can demand, because you're going to know how to speak about what's going on with you in an educated way. And you'll also be able to bring awareness to your providers who may not have access to the resources that you're getting access to. So there's a lot of, it's a lot of great information, and it's a very interactive course. She totally involves the audience or the participants. She encourages people to talk to each other in chat and offer their input and their questions. And it's just very interactive and really thorough. And I just really, I can't speak highly enough about it. And just, you know,
that is
Kim,
so cool.
If you get a chance to take that 101 course, you should totally jump into it with both feet. I think you would love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad that you brought that up. That's great. Very cool. Well, those are four really good resources tonight. All right, good. Then you're going to put that in the comments.
Yep, I'm doing that right now while we're talking.
Okay.
Yeah, in
great.
Fact, the next one coming up is on the 5th of October, and that's at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, and that is the one about the all about the A's assets, assessments, and analysis of behavior. They also have one on the 7th. At 7 p.m. And then the one, though, that if you were to focus on any of them that were out right now, I would say definitely hit the TBI 101. And that's the Can't You See Me? TBI, the Invisible Disability. And that's on October 21st. And that's at 7 p.m. EDT. And so definitely worth attending. It says TBI 101 training is designed for professionals working with youth and adults, parents, and caregivers of survivors of brain injury and any interested community members. And the overview virtual training includes basic information on acquired brain injuries, including types, incidence, prevalence, and leading causes. And based on understanding brain behavior relationships, they review signs and symptoms of brain injury, discuss impacts in the classroom. They spend a lot of time talking about impacts in education. And focus will be on formal and informal assessments to identify assets and deficits due to injury and appropriate academic strategies to support the student in the classroom and the community. And the adult education format will be a lecture, dialogue, Q&A, and then there's a presentation. And in addition to that, they provide you access to this wonderful resource called Padlet, which gives you access to a lot of useful articles and information that they've gathered for their participants to have access to. So yeah, it's just a real great virtual training. It's
very cool.
Split into 2 days. And each day is about 3.5 hours with a 30-minute break, about roughly 90 minutes into their session. And you'll need to attend both days of training to be able to get a spot for the course. So you need to be able to commit to the whole training. And it runs from 4 to 7:30 p.m. Arizona time. So you got to keep that in mind on a Friday. And then on Saturday, it's like from 8:30 in the morning to noon, Arizona time. So for those that are Midwest or East Coast, you just got to take that time frame into account. But yeah, it's a great opportunity, and I just, again, can't recommend it enough.
Great. Well, I did find the website just in the nick of time. We've got about 9 minutes left, but it's acl.gov is what it is, acl.gov. And I'll just tell you a little bit about what they do, because, again, it even took me a second, and it shouldn't have. I'm tired, but if you type in independent living, you're just going to get places to live. So it's acl.gov. These are Centers for Independent Living. And what are they? They're designed and operated by individuals with disabilities. Centers for Independent Living, or CILS, C-I-L-S, provide independent living services for people with disabilities. CILs are at the core of the ACL's independent living programs, which work to support community living and independence for people with disabilities across the nation, based on the belief that all people can live with dignity, make their own choices, and participate fully in society. These programs provide tools, resources, and supports for integrating people with disabilities fully into their communities to promote equal opportunities, self-determination, and respect. Now, they go on to talk about what it does, but this can have to do with aging. It can have to do with disability. You know, if you've got a TBI, it's rendered you disabled. Developmental disabilities, physical disabilities, and like I said, they have all kinds of services. One that's similar, but because each state has one, for example, if I was looking at Nebraska's earlier when I was, this is what I was talking about when you were talking about the donations of like wheelchairs, walkers, some help type things. Sometimes Centers for Independent Living might have those, but if they didn't, I was just kind of tongue-in-cheek when I said the pharmacy and the hospital aren't going to give them away. And that's why, yes, you and I agreed that the more places doing this kind of thing, the better. But for example, if one checked at their independent living center and they needed a wheelchair, for example, and there wasn't one available at that time, that's why, yes, it's good that the more places where this type of thing is going on, like the program that you're doing, the better, because there's so much demand. And, you know, as the boomers are getting older, and with 2.6 million people a year getting brain injuries, and the boomers getting older, you know, more and more of this stuff is going to be needed. And so the more places, the better. But they also, like I said, I think one thing they do that's really good is life skills-based training. And there's a lot of people that have problem that maybe doesn't get addressed by a psychiatrist after they've had a brain injury, and they need to deal with a program, maybe like something like DBT, but they call it something else there. They call it, basically it's four modules. They teach mindfulness, conflict resolution, emotion regulation, and I always forget the fourth thing. Again, they can turn you on to support groups, and there's a deal on there where you can look up your state. Every state is required to have at least one. There's no charge for most of the things that they offer. But peer-to-peer support, self-help, self-determination, independence, they're there to help you with those kind of things. And also, if you have an ADA type issue, that's a good place to talk about it. You know, the laws, writing out laws are great. You know, I don't mean to go back to this, but I just want to say it real quick, and then we're toward the end of the show. But, you know, somebody sent me something, and this just is what I'm going to say about the ADA. I'm going to be writing a little bit about the disability movement, and that's where we got the Americans with Disability Act, was as a result of the American disability movement and the people that were in charge of that. And it's great. You know, it gives, one of the things it did was lay out that places are accessible for people with disabilities. You know, when they build new buildings, they have to have certain size doorways, that kind of thing. All good. But it's not just that. You know, there's a lot to the Americans with Disabilities Act. And people with disability don't always have a lot of money. And if someone violates you under the Americans with Disability Act, you might not be able to find or afford an attorney to help you, unless it's high profile and the Civil Liberties Union wants to do it or something like that. And so laws are only as good as the teeth that are behind them to bite somebody in the ass for violating them. And, you know, same thing, this governor in Iowa that's going to close this center, somebody sent me an article, and she signed into law with a lot of fanfare and famous people. It showed the video, signed into law a bill that was going to really improve the, let's say, independent living situation, mental health care resources across the state. Well, the article this man sent me, that was a real heroic event, right? It made big news and all good, right? Except for the article he sent me, just in one little line of this long, glowing article, is the fact that it's not funded. So there's a fancy piece of paper with a really good idea on it, but they didn't bother to fund it. Got to watch these people like a hawk everywhere. So an independent living center would be a good place to go if you can't immediately go. I'm talking over. If you can't go to an attorney, that's a good place to check. They advocate. They're people with disabilities helping to advocate for people with disabilities. And so they know a lot about a lot of different things. ACL.gov. Just check it out and see the resources that they have, and know that there's at least one, normally a few, in each state. And so we're going to run over a minute, so I just want to tell everybody good night and God bless and thank you for being here tonight. And I'm sorry, I was kind of in and out with a million things on my mind. I appreciate all of the resources that Karen brought to the show tonight. And I think that, well, it's great. Any new resources we can find that are of help, we're not hearing about them. At least I'm not. I'm not hearing about them at the doctor's office. So I appreciate it when someone brings them to the table, especially such a wide variety of resources that you brought tonight. That covers a lot of ground. So thank you, Karen, for doing that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
And we'll be back and probably talk about, are we going to talk about, I was confused. I think we covered what we covered, and I'm going to, after the show, take off the PTS part. I can't do it on the intro that I put, but I can do it inside the program notes. Are we going to maybe be talking about that next month, or do we?
Whatever your heart desires, and something might come up between now and then that we feel led to put on the forefront.
Okay, I think I'll do what I normally do then, is just put the basic outline together and then add the notes back. But anyway, Karen will be back on the second Wednesday of October, and we'll be back on our regular schedule, provided that Simon is going to be back. And again, hope his jaw is doing well. God, he's had so many surgeries this last year. Yuck. Anyway, wishing him a smooth recovery, and going to go check out and see how Florida's doing. So thanks for being here tonight. And I'm going to close with a song. I was thinking about this today. Gary Nicholson is, someone else made this song famous. I can't say who, but a guy named Gary Nicholson owns it. Speaking of copyright issues, he owns it. He originated it. And if you asked, I don't know, 10 people who sang Good Days, Bad Days, they would tell you someone. But Gary Nicholson is the one who wrote the song and is a 2-time Grammy Award winner for blues music in Tennessee, of course. But this is something we all have, and I'm going to close out with this. Good night. God bless. Have a good week, everybody. And we're, again, praying for the people in Florida. This is Good Days, Bad Days by Gary Nicholson. Good night, everyone. Good night, Karen.
Everybody wants to know how I get along in these dark days since you've been gone. Sometimes I'm fine, sometimes I'm dying, stumbling through one step at a time. I have good days, bad days, sunshine and rain. I have good days, bad days, but some past all behind, and I'm all right till sundown again, then I'm right back where I've always been. I have good days, bad days, sunshine and rain. I have good nights are all the same. everywhere.